Everybody, and welcome back to No Fate, a Terminator podcast. I'm your host, Michael John Petty, and with me is my co-host, Tanner Radwick, and we are here today to talk to you about the next film of the Terminator saga, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines. So this is one that's going to be real interesting to talk about. A lot of people hate it. There's some people who like it. And for better or worse, it does exist and is the springboard into Terminator Salvation, which is the next film we'll talk about post this podcast. But before we get in, Tanner, it's been a couple weeks since we recorded an episode. It's been a little while. There's been some life changes. I moved to Los Angeles. I got to see the Terminator gas station from the first film.
That's pretty cool.
Wearing my No Fate shirt today. So there's that. That's pretty sweet. You can get that at Hot Topic, shameless plug. We're not getting paid, so if you don't, it's fine.
Hot Topic, hit us up.
But no, actually, there was one news article Terminator-related that I wanted to talk about with you very briefly before we got into this podcast, and it came out right after we recorded our Terminator 2 shows, but it was released before we released our Terminator 2 shows. Apparently, with the next Terminator film, which apparently they're going to make, they want to go more into the horror genre again, kind of like the first film, kind of like we had talked about, in a similar vein to the new Halloween films. That's what I was reading about, and I just thought that that was really cool, given that we just talked about that being what we think maybe they should do in order to spring new life into the franchise, is go back to the roots. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, and it's going to, I think it's going to be well received, so long as they do it right and they pay homage to it. It'll be interesting to see if they want to go more of a quote-unquote past timeline, where more in our present, or if they're going to set it in the future and go that route as well. I mean, you could implement horror very well in both scenarios, so it'll be cool to see what they could do.
So, getting into Terminator 3, we're going to jump right into it here. First and foremost, a little bit of T3 trivia.
This is trivia time. Be fun.
Yeah, trivia time.
I like it.
So the guys who wrote the film, Michael Ferris and John Bradico, I think is how you pronounce his name.
Okay.
They wrote this film, and they wrote Terminator Salvation. They also wrote the game. Your favorite film of all time. Yes.
That is my favorite movie of all time. How about that?
Yeah, and the director, Jonathan Mostow, was also an executive producer on the game. So this whole film is a distant cousin of that movie. That's kind of fun.
How about that? Did not know that. Thank you for sharing that.
Of course. And then another bit of trivia, this is for my own sake, because I have to mention this, because if I don't, I would have kicked myself later, is the Judgment Day footage shown at the end of the movie with the bombs dropping and the cities getting destroyed and that sick shot of all them going off while you're looking down on the globe. That footage was actually reused on my favorite TV show of all time, Smallville, in a future sequence where you learn more about Lex Luthor's like destiny to like eventually become the greatest villain of all time, opposing Superman. And so they actually use that footage in the show, which is really
interesting.
Funny. It's third season, I think it is. It might be its first season. But yeah, I wanted to talk about that real quick, because I remember when my wife and I were watching through Smallville, I saw those shots and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot Terminator shots are in the show. I don't know how that happened. But anyway, just cool little bits of trivia here.
It's funny that it has roots to some of our other favorite media.
I know, it's so weird, right?
Really interesting.
Well, Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, was the first Terminator film to be done by Warner Brothers. It was kind of a co-production between them and Columbia. And the first Terminator film without James Cameron, who decided he didn't want any part of it after 2 because 2 was his finished story and he didn't have anything more to say. Interestingly enough, Arnold Schwarzenegger also originally turned down being in this film, but after talking with James Cameron told him to take the money and run and just do it anyway. So he did, and it's actually his last starring role before being the governor of California, which is really interesting.
Yeah, he got a lot of money for it. In any case, though, this is also the first film that doesn't have Brad Fiedel in it.
It's true.
Which you can kind of tell when going through the movie. It's kind of lacking in that department in terms of the music.
Yeah, the only time, besides the credits, obviously, the only time where the music really gets to me is that very end when the bombs are dropping. I really like that track right there. That one's a really good one.
One of the better parts of the film, and of course it's a dark part of the film, but one of the elements when I watched this again that really stuck out with me that's kind of in relation to that is one of the opening dialogues that John Connor has in the film. He opens with, "The future is not set. There is no fate but what we make." And then he extends that by saying, "I wish I could believe that." So this film touches a lot on, is there fate? Is there no fate? And in the previous films, it really felt like, hey, there is no fate. We can change the future. This film almost leans more towards, there's a lot of fate. And you're going to have to, the Terminator comes right out and says, Judgment Day is inevitable. You only postponed it. There's a lot of that in this. And even at the end of this movie, you kind of think, oh my gosh, they're gonna destroy Skynet. But then they discover, oh no, we're just in a bomb shelter. Spoiler alert. But I love that they did that with this movie because it is kind of a dark ending and it sets up the future timeline really well. And I think
it's kind of reminiscent a little bit of the ending of the first film, where there's this ominous thing coming, but in this case, it's actually here. It actually happened. It's done. From now on, the future. It's the future.
Yeah, it's I remember being kind of surprised when I saw it. Do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
Yeah, it was when I was binging all of them. Yeah, so when I watched them, I watched the first four movies back to back. I didn't really know much about them going into each one, with the exception of like things it's like so the Arnold twist in Terminator 2. Or I knew that the fourth movie took place in the future, but I didn't really know much about this movie at all, actually, other than Sarah Connor wasn't in it and they recast John Connor.
All right. Well, let me set the stage here for you for what you missed out on, because because when I was a kid and when I first watched this movie, I was already a huge fan of this, and I remember it got announced that 3 was coming out. So what this come out? This came out in 2003, so I would have been math time. I would have been 9 years old when this came out.
Yeah,
I remember reading a magazine. Magazine had that like an article in it, and it had some pictures of this movie that was coming out, and it showed the future. So I heard the title Rise of the Machines, and I was like, oh, this is going to be the movie that's set in the future, and I'm going to see all these. It's going to be like the opening of T2, the whole thing.
Right.
So I was all excited about that. Of course, that's not the movie we got. But then we happened to be on vacation in California when we watched this, and we watched it on we were in our hotel room, and you could order it on the TV, whatever, in your hotel room. And we watched it, and it was kind of funny at the time because I think Arnold was like just starting to be governor. So we were in California, we put this movie on, and when he comes on screen, we're like, well, that's the governor. So that was my experience with it, and I was, of course, excited, and I loved it. I think my parents were on the side of, well, that was disappointing, as a lot of people were. But you and I have always maintained that this was not bad. You know, it gets too much hate.
I totally agree. And actually, and we just talked about this before recording, but for the longest time, for me, it was the most rewatchable Terminator movie because I didn't have to sit down and like have this heaviness that the first two movies gives.
Yeah.
And I could just sit down and watch it.
Yeah.
Anytime. And I already knew it was happening. I knew the context and I knew where it was going. So I just could sit down and enjoy it. And for a long time, that was true. I've watched this movie many, many times, but it's been probably 2 years since I watched it before this rewatch. And this rewatch, it felt a little more dated. And I think part of that is because in the time when I first watched Terminator to now, to the time we started doing this podcast, two Terminator films have come out.
Yeah.
And they've both been comparatively disappointing for me, and which I think you would also agree with.
Yes.
But and so I think I just expect more.
Yeah.
And so when I watched it, I was like expecting more, even though I already know I've already seen the movie so many times, but I still feel like I was expecting more from it. And That has nothing to do with the movie itself, I don't think. I think that has to do with my own biases towards where I want the franchise to go. But I still love this movie. I really do. I love Terminator 3. It's so fun. Nick Stahl is a fantastic John Connor. I was really bummed that they didn't keep him for Salvation, although I think Christian Bale does a great job too. I think it's very well done, and I see a lot of the Sarah Connor Chronicles version of John Connor in this movie. This is where they kind of intersect a little bit for me, is I feel like we're almost watching the same character. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I always kind of revert to this movie when watching the Sarah Connor Chronicles, because I do think there's a really strong parallel to that, especially with one of the other things. John Connor in 3, in this movie, he says he feels the weight of the future bearing down on him. And that's, of course, a huge theme of the Sarah Connor Chronicles, of John having to live a normal life while also knowing that he has this thing he has to do in the future, and it's a horrible thing for him to have to live with. So we get a glimpse of that in this movie as well, which is cool.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like that he was cast for this movie. I think he does a really good job. He does seem like an older version of Edward Furlong to me.
Yeah,
in the way he acts, and it feels like a natural development for his character. I think a lot of people were actually not super happy with his character, from what I can tell, or the casting of it. But yeah, I was a fan of it. I liked it. It was fine.
I feel like people who didn't, and I think this is true of things like the Star Wars prequels also, I feel like people who grew up with the original Star Wars or the original Terminator film have this idea of, I know what the Clone Wars are like because of how Ben Kenobi talks about it, or I know what the future is like and who John Connor is because of how Kyle Reese talked about him. And I think they get it in their heads that this has to be some mythic, epic, proportional thing. And it's not, especially when you're seeing versions of the character in T2, who's young, or in T3, who's still young. Like, he's our age in that movie.
Yeah.
Relatively. Probably a little younger. He isn't this character yet. The bombs haven't dropped yet. You know, he lost his mom not too long ago. He doesn't know who he is without Judgment Day. And honestly, he thinks he stopped it.
Yes.
And so we're seeing a version of John Connor who is not this epic leader who leads the resistance to victory and defeats Skynet at its core once and for all. No. We're seeing a John Connor who is developing into that. And as the film progresses, he becomes progressively more and more like that John Connor, which is why I really like at the beginning of the movie where you see this snapshot into the future and you see Nick Stahl's John Connor older. It's the same actor, and you know that it's the same actor, and it's because you know that he could be that. But he's
got the scar
on
his face.
Yeah, he does. It's great. It reminds me a lot of T2, and that's really sweet.
I like that. It's a really quick glimpse, but I've always liked that part for some reason. It kind of stands out.
Well, adds to this myth, right? It adds to this myth of who John Connor is. He's this epic leader, and he is battle damaged, and he's gruff, and he's going to kill all the machines, and it adds to the image.
It does. I think what some people struggle with this, to contrast that with the Star Wars analysis as well, is, of course, Star Wars, I think a lot of people who didn't like the prequels were mad that it kind of went in a different way than what the original trilogy did. Whereas I think people who get mad at Terminator 3 are mad because it kind of just recycled what Terminator 2 did and doesn't necessarily expand on it. In a way, it's almost the same movie in a way. I mean, do they really expand that much other than just showing how they basically survive Judgment Day? They really don't do much more than just that. So I think that was kind of a big complaint for this movie, is that it didn't necessarily go any special direction with the franchise other than that. And I guess beyond that, it has some fantastic action sequences, but I would also argue that it has less iconic action sequences.
I agree. I think in this movie they do more, and I don't think more is always better. I think sometimes you can go too big, and I think films like the Avengers films fall into this trap a lot, where they go too big and there's too much CGI and there's too much explosions, and Michael Bay has the same issue, and it feels like it doesn't mean anything.
Right. Yeah, no, it's very true. Which, speaking of Michael Bay, this car chase in the beginning, I kept thinking, this is kind of Transformers-ish.
Yeah.
even though this came out before Transformers, I think the first Transformers was 2006 or 7, like yeah. 3 or 4 years after this. So, but it came to mind.
No, absolutely. And I think that's something that this movie does that is part of why it's not as well received, is because the action doesn't feel motivated. Whereas yeah. in the first two films, it's everything is mechanical. Everything is incredibly motivated. This movie feels almost more like a road chase movie, but not as well structured as something like Mad Max Fury Road. So mm-hmm. I think that's where the problem is. I think if it were more, I don't know. I don't know what would have changed that. I don't know what makes something like, besides the practical effects and the score and all the other cool things that go into movies, but I don't know what makes Mad Max Fury Road a better road movie than Terminator 3. I don't know why.
I would have to reflect on that a bit more, but it is odd how Mad Max, which you would think would be a weird spin-off franchise, to be so well received immediately,
yeah.
but that yeah. movie was just an instant classic in terms of action movies.
Yeah. And it's my second favorite, mine after T2. So
yeah, it's hard to pinpoint. Well, it is and it isn't. I guess in relation to this movie, it's hard to pinpoint what makes that movie so successful in comparison to T3. I guess I would argue a lot of it is the practical effects, which is sure. lacking in T3 in comparison to T2. But yeah, outside of that, I don't know. I mean, I like the cast. Arnold is fantastic in it. You know, I think it's hard to beat Robert Patrick's bad guy.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too.
Yeah, and she does a fine job, but at the same time, she's kind of a less interesting Terminator, I think, and yeah. maybe a less intimidating Terminator.
Yeah, I think the thing
they certainly
this movie
get the best
does
of her a lot.
Yes, well, she doesn't seem very intelligent, right? She kills all of these lieutenants of John's, but then constantly loses him, and you know, she just isn't as intelligent of a Terminator as the Terminator, as Arnold was in the first film, or as the T-1000. I mean, she's just not, and I don't know why that is. Mm-hmm. I think maybe just plot convenience, probably.
It is plot convenience. When she gets out of the cop car disguised as Catherine Brewster's fiance,
yeah.
she just changes back into the Terminator while walking up to her, instead of just maintaining that disguise and going up and killing her, you know?
Right.
Little stuff like that. But, I mean, it's all plot convenience. But similar to that, I mean, in that same scene-ish, we get a return to Dr. Silverman. That yeah. was fun.
Yes, yes.
And, of course, we get a glimpse at that character also in the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Not the same actor, but anytime you get, I don't know, it's fun seeing that character because he's so awful.
Yes, horrible things. Insane thing.
One of the things that stood out to me during this movie, I was watching it, and you know, this movie just kind of makes fun of itself a lot. It's like the third in the franchise, so they're like, let's make fun of it, kind of, and like do these little hints back to other things, and maybe that's kind of what weakens the plot as well. I mean, Mad Max, of course, is more in the sense of standalone, because it's not a sequel; it's more of it's a reboot. So it's staying fresh, and it's not putting these little, like, silly, like, remember when this happened, the kind of things in there, which this one, of course, kind of does. They have him go into the stripper bar to get his clothes and whatnot. Mm-hmm. One of the things that made me laugh, though, is that, of course, all the ladies are cheering and whatnot because it's Arnold and he's naked. But after he tells the guy to take off his clothes, they just cut to him leaving the bar with the clothes on.
Yeah.
But the ladies are still cheering, though. So, I mean, he didn't just, like, horribly mangle that stripper in there. What probably happened is the stripper took off his clothes peacefully, and he just, like, dressed in front of them and left. But we didn't get that scene. Anyway, that's what I thought when I watched this movie.
No, and that's really fair. And I think you're right. I think Mad Max doesn't have any baggage.
Yeah.
Whereas Terminator 3 has so much baggage, and it feels the need to respond to it. Like, you know, we have to explain why Sarah Connor's dead, even though originally they wanted her in the film.
Yeah.
We have to explain that this isn't the first Terminator or the second Terminator. This is a new Terminator. In fact, it's even a newer model than the last one.
Yeah.
We have to explain that the TX is a completely new Terminator that's kind of like a combination of everything we've seen before. We have to explain why Kate Brewster's father is important. We have to explain how Skynet is created, because we destroyed Cyberdyne, so we have to do something to bring that back. You know, there's so much that they feel the need to explain and expand upon in a way that Mad Max Fury Road doesn't have to. Mad Max does a ton of world building, while Terminator 3 just tries to expand its world that it's already been created. They have no room to build.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the difference too.
It's a lot of that kind of pointless dialogue stuff that you see that to try and justify where the plot is going and whatnot. I mean, you see a lot of that in Dark Fate as well, really weakened that movie as well. So I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. It's the third in the series, and it's okay.
Yeah, it's not the best of the three. But it's not the worst Terminator movie either. In fact, it's still one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I think, going back to what we were talking about earlier with John, I think, honestly, what makes this movie for me is John Connor. You take him out of this movie, and I don't like it nearly as much.
Mm.
And I'm not saying I always like him as a character. Like, at the beginning, like, he's having a rough time, you know? I struggle at times to find a reason to care, because he doesn't seem to care.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as an audience member, you're looking in on that and you're saying, dude, you don't care about taking care of yourself, let alone the rest of the world. Like, why am I going to care about you? And all of a sudden he's thrown back into this world, into this life, and he slowly has to start becoming who he knew he was supposed to be. And all that character development you see from Terminator 2 comes back. It's just like muscle memory. And that's when you really start to care and the story really starts going. And that's what I really love about this film, is the entire time John is finally stepping into this role fully, and he's not 10 years old. You know, he actually is able to step into that role.
Yes.
He's not just showing signs of being that great later. He's actually fully stepping into that role, even going towards the end where they're rushing to stop Skynet, where they're trying to go pull the plug. He's leading that charge. Because he knows what this means, and he knows, like he said earlier in the film, what if you knew that you were supposed to do this amazing thing, but in order for that to happen, all these people had to die. He doesn't want these people to die. He doesn't want the world to end. He doesn't want that. And he's willing to be the leader he's supposed to be, he's destined to be, in order to stop that. And I think that's what makes this movie for me, and that's why it's always been so rewatchable, is that it really is a hero's journey type story, and John comes full circle, not just from the last film, but from the beginning of this film to the end. And I think that's really cool. And there's a scene at the beginning of the movie where he's on a bridge, and he's kind of hanging off a bridge a little bit. And in the script, it's written, and in the novelization, it's written to imply that John was contemplating suicide. Because he doesn't have anything to live for.
Honestly.
And you contrast that with the very end of the movie when the people are trying to contact the base in California that he and Kate are in, and he steps in, he goes, this is John Connor. Well, who's in charge there, Connor? Me.
Yeah.
And you just contrast the beginning with the end, and there's just so much growth. There's so much development in John in this film, and I just think it's so well mirrored in the Sarah Connor Chronicles, and they just so remind me of each other, that show in this film, their arcs, that I just can't help but love it.
Yeah. Well, and then expanding on that as well with him contemplating suicide there, right before he gets contacted by Montana Civil Defense, Kate says to him, we could just let the timer go off on the C4.
Yeah.
She kind of puts it in his hands. He doesn't have any ties to have to feel like he has to turn the thing off to save her. She's willing to die at that point with him. So she puts it in his hands, gives him that option, because he knows in that moment, I can't stop Judgment Day. It's happening right now. I in his mind, I have to go through with this thing that I've feared my whole life, and now I have this out. I have this out. But then he chooses not to. And yeah, that's super awesome when you compare the bridge scene and his struggle with that. And I wish they even, like, I don't know. I guess it would be cool if they signaled more so that that's what he was contemplating. But I also always had that feeling inside me with the look on his face and him dropping the beer anyway.
But yeah, and I didn't. I never realized that until I looked more into it. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. I'm with you. I wish they had cued that more. But
knowing
that now makes a huge difference.
Absolutely. I've always maintained that a flawed character is an interesting character. And a flawed character is what I'm drawn to the most. And it's relatable for all of us because we're all broken and we're all flawed in some ways. So I mean, if you have this perfect beacon all the time, it's a little vanilla, and you can kind of point to. I mean, that's why so many people care about Iron Man as opposed to Captain America in the current MCU. Things like
or
that.
Or Batman as opposed to Superman.
That's another one. So seeing John's self-doubt and him questioning himself, especially in the funeral home, and the Terminator has to. Snap him out of it, essentially. I always love that scene as well. But yeah, you're absolutely right. He's very strong in this movie, and it definitely carries the film.
And with that, we have to close our discussion for the day on Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines. But do not worry, we will have part 2 of this show coming out within the next 2 weeks. So we're real excited to continue our conversation on Rise of the Machines with you guys. We have a lot more to talk about. Obviously, we have to talk about the Terminator himself still. So we will be getting there as time goes on. Until then, you can visit our website, nofatepodcast.com. To follow us and listen to more episodes of the show. We have episodes out on the first Terminator film, the second film, and an intro episode talking about our goal for the podcast and talking about the Sarah Connor Chronicles. We also are on iTunes or Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For my co-host Tanner Radwick, I'm Michael John Petty, and until next time, just remember, you are the Resistance.